Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
What we do here.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. I appreciate you tuning in. Be here till 3 o'clock. That's right. I work 2 whole hours a day.
Lord have mercy.
Lord have mercy. And I'm on Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Appreciate if you check that show out, too. Like me on Facebook. A lot of action on my Facebook page these days. Our brackets are up, and you are voting the 2 and 3 games. The 2 seed and 3 seeds are playing in action now on the Cuckoo Trump brackets. You can vote until Thursday at 11. We'll close this round Thursday at 11. Playing right now are the escalator ride versus the Taco Bowl picture, the Bill Clinton women versus Covfefe, the Boy Scout speech versus the Billy Bush tape, the wiretapping comment about Obama versus Megyn Kelly. It'll all make sense when you like me on Facebook. They are voting there, and boy, are they voting there. You can join the fun. By the way, you know, it's really doing well in the tournament right now. the elevator ride. Taco Bowl picture is killing it. I will tell you this, though. We posted all of the brackets in a very simple, printable fashion for you today. So it's a new post on Facebook. Even if you've already done it, it doesn't hurt to go back and look. But Steve Bertrand, my old producer Matt Bubala, swung by today, and I all filled out the brackets. We played ahead, as it were. And we all agreed that the same team will win the Cuckoo Trump brackets.
Really?
I know. I mean, and it's funny because Matt and I disagreed on almost everything. You and I were more similar in our brackets, although, you know, you get into arguments about what was a nuttier or more important moment. But we all, through much different avenues, came to the same conclusion about what the nuttiest moment was. I won't even say what it is. I'll let you fill out the brackets. Maybe that team will be in the championship game. On Facebook, I am King John. I am disappointed and discouraged for those of you who are trying to buy yourself some LaCroix water and are finding that some retail points, confused about the rollout of this new soda tax, are charging you a penny per ounce for that. But I'm hearing from DNA Info and other places that, in fact, some people are charging the tax they should and some are charging the tax they shouldn't. But in Cook County now, today is Wednesday, right, Steve?
Today is Wednesday.
And today, then, you got to pay an extra penny per ounce for the sweet sodas.
My soda cost an extra 20 cents today.
You've got to stop drinking
Why?
Sodas.
Why are you copping me on this?
Why am I doing what?
Why am I my beverage cop?
Yeah, I know. I've been your mommy on this one. Well, you know why? Because I'm not into soda. I don't drink that many sweetened beverages. So this is very easy for me to take the moral high ground. Mm. But if they said, okay, we're going to do this to beer or gin and tonics, well, I would have a much different attitude. I'd be outraged. I'd be marching on the street. How dare they? The temerity of it all.
Did you see the Queen of England has a gin and tonic every day?
Okay, Vanity Fair has a fascinating article. Vanity Fair is a real good download or buy it. But anyway, here's what Vanity Fair did. An article about the cocktails, the alcoholic beverages that the Queen of England, who is 90, has every day. The Queen of England has 4 cocktails and a slice of cake every single day.
It's going to kill her.
She and their attitude was right. They go, girl, you're 90. You are doing something right. Maybe there's something to the consistency or the timing or just the genetic fortune that she has, but there's something about what she's doing. She's getting away with it. And here's what the Queen of England has at 11 a.m., a gin drink. It's not a gin and tonic, but it's a gin with some sweet drink and with some sort of sweet mixer and I think a lemon, probably a lime. But she does a gin cocktail at 11 a.m. And then at lunch, that's when I think she has the gin and tonic. And then for dessert, she has a glass of wine and a slice of cake. As would I if I knew I was going to live to be 90. And if I was the Queen of Flippin' England, who's going to tell you what to do, right? So before you get back from your Panera, the Queen of England has had three cocktails. How about that? Then she does whatever queens do. And then when she gets ready for bed at night, she has a glass of champagne. She has four cocktails a day.
Good for her.
Amen to that, my friend. If that's making her, you know, I'm not sure if she's slurring her words. The, you know, real important number on that isn't four, but it's how many ounces that she's consuming. And maybe she's got a water. I tend to drink my gin and tonics with just a splash of tonic, I'll be honest with you. But if she can pull that off, I mean, really, I'd eat potato chips all day long if I knew I was going to live to be 100 and not regret it. I mean, why do you do anything? Why do you not enjoy the foods and beverages you really want to enjoy? Well, it's bad for you. Well, yes, it is. If you think about it, the city of Chicago would be taxing gin and tonics. They'd be taxing beer more. This town is craft brew crazy. If they were really concerned, think about this. It's not just your liver. It's the cancer you can get. It's the car crashes you cause. They would start taxing craft beer. All those young, happy, hip people who are drinking those funny craft beers. Well, if we went ahead and taxed that another, I don't know, dime an ounce?
They can't do that. How could they do that?
You know, really, it is about advocacy groups. It's about power.
I mean, but you'd have to tax all beer. You couldn't tax craft. You know, what are you going to tax small beverages? I mean, small breweries?
Yes, you are. Absolutely. If you're over a certain threshold, then it's okay to get plastered. But under, we're going to make it more difficult for you to consume that. Okay, do all beer. Do all alcohol.
How about man buns? You get more if you buy it with a man bun?
That's just a penalty. Right. I would actually allow the police to just come up to men and just go, you know, they're in Andersonville and go, hey, listen, we're going to have to give you a ticket. But like, why, man? Because of the man bun. Oh, yeah. Okay, that's cool. I get it. Yep. Nope. Fair enough. Fair enough. And I think the ticket will be $750. But if they really cared about your health, they'd be taxing us more for that. And remember, a milkshake at McDonald's is not being taxed extra. That's got dairy, chocolate. There's nothing good.
Wait, is that true?
That's 100% true.
Okay.
At least I think it's 100% true. They're not taxing milkshakes on this, are they, Steve?
No, I really don't know. It's the whole confusion of it, what's charged, what's taxed, and what's not. But
yeah,
it seems to me to be a sweetened beverage.
Yeah, but it depends on how it's where it's manufactured. I know. It's not because that's made on the premises, right? They make the milkshake there at McDonald's as opposed to stacking the case with cans of milkshake. If it was cans of milkshake, I mean, what a funny distinction that is, but so it goes. If you're finding any price jumps or not, just be kind of curious what you're noticing out there. 312-981-7200 here in the healthiest county in America, Cook County, also known as Chicago, Illinois. Todd Westby joins us in just a minute. He is the CEO of Three Square Market. He had a chips and salsa party the other day in Wisconsin. He joined us before the chips and salsa party and invited us to it. We declined. But he made national news yesterday for his chips and salsa party. CNN did it. New York Times did it. Everybody's talking about the chips and salsa party in Wisconsin. He'll join us to tell us how that went in just a minute. And then finally, Margaret Sullivan says hi. At 1:35, the media columnist for The Washington Post breaks down the utterly complicated Seth Rich story. But it's a strange enough story that we better get in front of this rather than try and play catch-up. Jan, just jump in here real quick. You're on WGN before I go to my guests. Jan, what did you want to say? Hi.
Hi, John. It's so good to have you back.
Thank you.
I just wanted to tell you and Steve that I did a math this morning.
Yeah.
There's a store here in Orland that has pop, the 24-pack of pop, on sale for $5.99. But when you add the tax, it becomes $8.87 before the sales tax.
Yeah, sure. $5.99 to you're $5.99 to almost $9.
Right. Hmm. I'm not going to buy pop or any of the lemonade. It's lemonade. It's tea. It's all of those things in Cook County, and I'm on the outskirts of Will County. So that's where I will go. I will not buy it in Cook County. And I was wondering what happens in the restaurants when you order a pop. My daughter was wondering, are they going to do refills or are they going to have to charge you for each glass of pop you buy? Lemonade or tea?
All I know is the 20-ounce, if you get a 20-ounce soda at McDonald's or Burger King or wherever, they will charge you 20 extra cents. So I can't, I would imagine if you're at a nice sit-down restaurant, they will charge you per ounce extra for that drink, or at least someone's got to pay it. Now, if you get a refill,
I wonder. I mean, how are they going to figure that out?
I think here's what they're going to do. They're going to call every resident of Cook County at the end of the year, and they're going to go, did you have refills? Did you have refills? And if you did, you have to tell them. And then they're going to send you a bill.
Wonderful.
I don't know. Jan, thanks for the call. If anybody has an answer to that, now that you mention it, I'd like to hear it. I don't know what the resolution to that is. Let's see if Todd Westby knows. Hey, Todd, we're sort of digesting the new soda tax that we're having to pay here in Chicago. How are you, Todd?
Hi, fine, thank you, John. How are you?
Good. Do you have any wisdom for us in Wisconsin about how we're taxing ourselves to death here?
I've got enough other things to worry about right now than taxing, so I'll stay out of that conversation, if that's okay.
You're the CEO of Three Square Market. Your company is actually involved in vending machines and little mini cafeterias and businesses. You make that technology, right?
Yes, we write self-checkout software for business markets.
You are also the distributor in the United States of the system that enables employers to chip their employees so that they'll have something under their skin and will enable them to use their, say, hand like a fob to open the door, to sign in, to do things that we otherwise have electronic devices for. Am I right?
Yes, you are.
So you had a big day yesterday, didn't you?
Yes, it was. It was a lot of fun. We had about 44 people that were actually chipped, and we had to stop because it got too late in the day, and we're picking up it up again in another couple weeks here.
So you had a chip and salsa party.
That's what we're calling it, just to have a little fun with it. But it was a great day here. Everything went smooth. There was a lot more press than I ever anticipated here, and it was quite humbling and shocking at the same time.
Why do you say that?
Well, we didn't do this, you know, hey, we're going to chip our employees to go out and seek attention. I guess we really should have probably thought what's going to happen after we said we're going to do that. We thought it'd create some interest. We just honestly never realized, because we are a technology company, like our programmer said, this is what we do. We create technology, so why wouldn't I chip myself? We went to do it more for our own internal use here, and it ended up being where now we're over 500 million views online.
500,000, but still, wow. Wow.
No, 500 million.
Nah, you don't have five. No, no way you got 500 million views. All you do is
We have a news agency that is expecting by the end of this month to be up to basically a billion. And what's happened with this, John, is like WCCO, your old counterpart up here.
Minnesota,
In three days, it was their highest viewed online article ever in 3 days.
Of you guys chipping your employees. Today. Keep going.
USA Today, it's the number one article on there yesterday on their news feed. LinkedIn, Facebook, Snapchat, Google, Yahoo. I mean, it's just mind-boggling how much attention this has gathered. And, you know, I never thought I'd see our company on Snapchat, you know, as their featured articles. Facebook, LinkedIn, we're having the representative vice president from LinkedIn coming up next Tuesday. I could go on and on with things that just we never expected out of this. However, we're, you know, more than happy to accommodate and try to deal with them, too.
Todd Westby's on the phone for just a couple minutes here. He's the CEO of Three Square Market. He was on our show last week promoting the fact or just mentioning that on August 1st, they were going to have a chips and salsa party where employees could be so chipped if they wanted. They didn't have to get chipped, right?
No, they didn't. It was completely voluntary.
Yeah. So are the chips working now? People have got these little beeps in their fingers when they hold it up to the plate. Does the door open or whatever's supposed to happen?
Well, a long story short, last night I had an interview at 1:30 and I had to come into the office for the UK. I got in my car. Oh, shoot, where's my stuff at? And then I remembered how I got my hand. I came up to the door, opened it up, and just smiled. And it was actually quite rewarding and a lot of fun to be able to do that.
You know, when you spoke to us last week, I think one of the most interesting takeaways from the conversation, and I know some people are horrified at this or worried that this kind of technology is not always going to be used in our best interests. But a woman called in and she said she works with elderly people or maybe hospice care. She said sometimes we don't know what their intentions are. Do they have DNRs? Things like that. But if that information was embedded in their skin in a chip that was somehow digitized, or maybe just sends out that radio frequency and then accesses the information, you know, that was a eureka moment as she was describing it. And as I recall, you said that hospitals have reached out to you for that very reason. Am I right?
Yes, and they've already, one of them has already presented to their board of directors and got a 5 out of 5, which means pursue it further. And regarding what that lady mentioned, the people that wear those ID bracelets or necklaces,
yeah,
if they had a little symbol, say, tattooed about the size of a BB on their hand, they would know to read that, and they wouldn't have to wear around sometimes the embarrassing bracelet or necklet everywhere. They could just scan that, and it would have all of their medical information. And we've been talked to already by a large company regarding doing just that. So it's led to things that are easy to do from our standpoint, just things that we never believed would happen.
Hey, Todd, are you guys over there at Three Square Market publicly traded?
No, we're not.
Is there any chance that you guys are going to go public with this? And can I get in on the ground floor?
No, we're not. And we really stay away from that subject because we're just having so much fun in the moment with it that, you know, no, we're not. But right. We had somebody write us a letter saying, I'm only looking to work for Fortune 100 companies, and I'd like to consider yours. We just had to laugh at it.
I'm going to write a number on a piece of paper. And I'm going to slide it across the digital universe to you. When you see that number, I want you to let me know if I'm in.
I'll do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, this is all fascinating. If you come down to the Chicago area, you're in northwest Wisconsin. You're not too far from the Twin Cities. What town are you in Wisconsin?
River Falls, Wisconsin, right on the border.
Yeah. Well, if you ever make it into the Chicago area for a presentation or whatever, come on by and we'll have you chip some of us up for kicks and giggles.
And we had 6 reporters yesterday that were actually chipped. So, and then one of them actually removed it too, and he was done just to see if it could be done, what we were telling people could happen.
Yeah, you said you can push it right back out from underneath your skin. But, you know, suppose I'm like, okay, I want to be in. I'll be one of the first chipped people in Chicago, but it doesn't do me any good because my company doesn't have reciprocal technology. It wouldn't do me any good here, right?
Well, in a matter of a month, we'll have a payment application like Google Wallets that you'll be able to use it as a payment device.
Ah, that's where I want to go. I don't want to remember usernames and passwords and carry around cards. I just want to put my thumb up to something or the web of my skin between my thumb and my finger and just go boop. And something happens. We're going to go there someday. Am I right?
Yes, we will. And, you know, someday you'll also maybe be wearing a shirt like I have on now that says, I got chipped.
All right, Todd. Please stay in touch. Come to Chicago. Swing through here, okay?
We will. And thanks for your time, John. We really appreciate it.
Todd Westby is the CEO of a company called Three Square Market. All right, Steve, I pay attention. I know you do, too. This story's a little complicated. We've asked a guest to come on and help us understand the Seth Rich story. I'm reading from a piece in part by Margaret Sullivan, who is the media columnist for The Washington Post. And she sort of explains this grand conspiracy, which is behind the Seth Rich story. Seth Rich, a young man, I believe he was about 27 or 8 years old, who was murdered in what may have been a botched robbery. The investigation is still open. But there's a conspiracy theory about the death of Seth Rich, who worked for the DNC. And the theory, she says, goes something like this. Hillary Clinton arranged to have Seth Rich assassinated. Why? Because Seth Rich betrayed the DNC. What did he do? He sent internal information to WikiLeaks during the campaign. It was a DNC inside job from Seth Rich. I thought it was Russian hackers. No, the Russian hackers, she said, goes the conspiracy theory, had nothing to do with it. Well, if that's the truth, and it was an inside job on the DNC, and just to make it juicier still, Hillary Clinton had that guy killed because he did that, well, then Donald Trump is completely off the hook. So what about that? Fox and Friends and Sean Hannity have been carrying the ball on this. Fox News has now disassociated itself with it, saying, actually, that didn't go through the rigorous checking that we do, and so therefore we're no longer going to promote that story. It's off the site. Sean Hannity has not been so circumspect. Okay, Margaret, that's all I know, and I'm reading you.
It's a complicated story, but it's a very interesting one because it was given new life this week when a police investigator who was also a commentator for Fox News, a guy named Rod Wheeler, decided to sue Fox and the parent company, 20th Century Fox, and a Fox correspondent, and a guy that he had originally worked with on the grounds that he was misquoted. And, you know, the interesting thing about this is that we know, the suit says, and it's also been confirmed by Sean Spicer, that the White House knew in advance that Fox was going to publish what turned out to be not only a bogus news story, you know, that there was this craziness with WikiLeaks and the reason that Seth Rich died was that he was murdered by somebody related to the Hillary Clinton campaign, but that the president, according to this lawsuit, that the president knew about this bogus story and was cheering it on. Now, it's not, I don't think we can take that at face value because Rod Wheeler, who filed suit and, you know, did provide text messages and voicemails that would back this up, has, you know, he's changed form in this story so many times from working for the Seth Rich family to being a correspondent on Fox News and now accusing Fox of misquoting him and hurting his reputation. So, but the, you know, what we do know is that Sean Spicer has said, yes, he knew 4 weeks before that this story was being prepared by Fox News, and the White House, you know, let it happen at the very least. At the most, they were pressing for it and encouraging it. And well, I'd make one other point, which yeah. is that since this whole conspiracy theory came up, some of President Trump's biggest, you know, media supporters, Alex Jones from InfoWars and Sean Hannity, and, you know, on the political side, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich have really gotten behind this theory and pushed it, you know, very hard and only, you know, ceased and desisted when the young man's family said, please stop dragging our son's name, you know, through the mud. There's nothing to this.
So Sean Hannity has, but not because he still doesn't believe it, but just out of deference to the family.
Eventually, you know, and it took a lot of pleading, I think, and a lot of imploring for him to finally, give it up.
Well, what evidence is there that Hillary Clinton put a hit on this DNC staffer?
Oh, absolutely not.
No, but I mean, seriously, I mean, if this story exists at all, then how or why does it exist? What are the roots of it?
I mean, that's, I can't prove something that isn't the case. It's made up. Rod Wheeler originally, offered some speculation that it hadn't simply been a botched robbery, that there looked like something suspicious going on. He may have even said something about Seth Rich's correspondence with WikiLeaks, which is, you know, I think also unproven and speculation. So it kind of started there and built, as these kinds of theories do. You know, you might remember the one about the pizzeria in Washington, in which people were convinced that Hillary Clinton was running a child sex ring. And, you know, a guy believed it to the point where he walked in there with a gun and fired it. So, you know, people do come to believe these things. It doesn't mean they have any basis in reality.
What's the president's relationship to this? You said they didn't back away from the story, but the president isn't the editor at Fox News. That's an independent news organization that should be able to make its own calls. This isn't Donald Trump's reporting.
No, but, you know, according to the text messages and voicemails that are a part of this lawsuit, and again, I think you have to take it, you know, it's interesting, but take it with a grain of salt. He was very, very interested in this story and wanted to get it out there because it deflected from
The Russian,
attention on the Russians. But I mean, on the Russians as the source of the leaks.
So Steve Bertrand's in our newsroom, and he and I are both putting our heads together on this. What are you hearing, Steve?
Well, so I'm interested in the part of this. Is it Butkowski?
Butkowski.
Thank you. And he was the one in email contact. Help me if I'm wrong.
He's the Trump supporter,
Wheeler,
Ed Butkowski,
contact with Wheeler. And there were emails from Butkowski to Wheeler or to Fox ahead of a story being out the next day, saying that the White House wants you to use this to say that the Russia collusion story should be put to bed, that this proves it's wrong.
Before you comment on that, Margaret, this is Chris Cuomo reading that text. It was a text. This is Chris Cuomo quoting that.
The problem is they're your words, Ed. I mean, you know, the text message, not to add any more pressure, but the president just read the article. He wants the article out immediately. It's now all up to you, but don't feel the pressure.
Okay. That was the text message from Butkowski
to Wheeler. And then I saw video the next morning, the anchors on Fox saying, in relation to this story, well, this should put to bed any Russia collusion story.
Margaret?
Well, it doesn't do that, you know, and I
know it doesn't do that, but am I correct? Is that what happened? There was this text and then the Fox anchors sort of echoed those words the next morning on TV.
Right. Yes, absolutely. And Butkowski, who, you know, apparently isn't denying that he wrote that text message saying, let's get this story up, the White House wants it, is now saying, well, I was just joking. And, you know, that's, I think, disingenuous.
Boy, they have got the weirdest sense of humor in this White House. That's a joke like when you tell police officers to bash the head of suspects against the roofs of cars when they're putting them in the back seat. And that's just the sort of sense of humor I guess I don't have yet. So,
I know. It's certainly a way to back away from things, you know, that are undeniable.
What's the matter with you? What's the matter? You don't have a sense of humor? No. Come on.
Honey, I was kidding.
Right. Okay, so is it true, though, that the president, in fact, saw this story before it was published and did indeed encourage it, regardless of whether or not it's true? Is that angle on the story true?
We don't know that. I mean, it's been denied by the White House. It's been denied by the guy who wrote the text messages. And it's impossible to say. All we know is that Butkowski was saying, hey, the president's seen it. He's behind it. Let's go. We got to get this aired. I mean, there's no way of knowing that. What we do know is that Sean Spicer, in the West Wing, pretty close to the president, did know about this story and, you know, sat by. And so that's, you know, I think that's notable in and of itself, and that is undeniable.
Can I ask what would have brought that meeting on? Because they didn't go to Spicer with any sort of, I don't imagine they were asking for White House confirmation or comment on it. It was a story outside the White House altogether. So why would they have been there?
It's being described as a courtesy meeting with a wealthy donor who's always been in Trump's corner, who brought along this Fox commentator/investigator and introduced him to Spicer.
Ed Mattausky we're talking about, yeah.
And so they were talking about Russian adoptions.
Right.
Okay, now that was funny.
That's the topic. I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of conversation about that.
I want to just listen to this text one more time. I could read it. I don't have the verbiage in front of me, but here's it from CNN.
I mean, you know, the text message, not to add any more pressure, but the president just read the article. He wants the article out immediately. It's now all up to you, but don't feel the pressure.
Okay, so that's it sounds like before it was even published, Margaret, the president had access to what Fox was going to put out there?
That's the story. That's what's in the lawsuit. I don't know that we can ascribe truth to that. I'm, you know, hesitant to do that. I don't really want to get into the fake news conspiracy theory world myself, but that's what's being alleged in the lawsuit. And there are text messages behind it. Were they serious? Were they kidding? You know, is it just a joke? You know, I think that it seems unlikely that that kind of thing was just a joke, but I can't say for sure.
Well, the only way I can connect this to anything that does seem to matter these days, other than the apparent and maybe understated right now tragedy of the murder of a young man, but the only way to connect it to something else that bears relevance here is the, you know, whole Russian hack into the DNC and the maybe, you know, manipulation of the election. And I'm not exactly sure how we get from here to there.
Well, I mean, I guess I see the importance of this in a different way, which is that we have a president who is constantly criticizing the mainstream media for being fake news, for putting fake stories out there and false stories, when in fact this is a false story that apparently had the at least tacit approval of the White House. So, you know, to me, that's the interesting thing about this,
yeah,
is that the claims of fake news, which are coming constantly from the White House, might actually be more appropriately directed internally.
Well, it's unseemly. Is it against the law? I mean, does anybody pay a price for this?
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think, you know, that as the suit develops, there may be, you know, this is the great thing about a lawsuit. It tends to flush a lot of things out into the open. So, you know, we'll see if discovery and witnesses and the actual, you know, trying of the case bring some of this stuff, give us some light on it.
Boy, they sure do seem to be anxious to distract our attention from any connection between the campaign and the Russians, don't they? And this is, if nothing else, another instance of that, isn't it?
Yes, and of course, you know, the president wants to have a foil. He wants to have someone to criticize, and so there was no one better than Hillary Clinton. And with her out of the picture, I think the media becomes the chief place that he can direct his anger and his, you know, on the basis of trying to appeal to his base, I think.
And yet, despite all of this evidence, okay, so they sure are trying to cover something up. We still don't have something. We don't have a direct link, do we? I'm thinking out loud here, guys.
Certainly no. Look, I think we do know that there was Russian interference in the election, or an attempt to. I don't think there's any doubt of the hacking and the efforts to that much is certain. Was there, the question that remains is, was there collusion between the Trump campaign and Trump associates and Russian government or Russian agents? That is, you know, these are two different things, and that is certainly, in my mind, you know, a lot of people think, well, we already know that. Look at all these meetings. I don't think the meetings prove collusion.
I think you're absolutely right. I think that's the danger here, that we're saying, aha, 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 you see. Well, you still don't have it. You still don't have proof that Donald Trump or Jared Kushner or one of them actually conspired, you know, said trading diplomats or sanctions for information that was negative to Hillary Clinton. We still don't have that. We do not have that.
No, we don't. But as you know, many times the cover-up is worse than the crime. And in this case, there's been so much effort to, get out in front of this, obscure it, that, you know, it does make you wonder. But I certainly agree, and I feel strongly that has not been proven yet and may never be.
One last thing. I just want to reread that paragraph. On a phone line, and we have to go now, Margaret Sullivan, media columnist for Washington Post. You're terrific. I so appreciate your time today.
And thank you very much.
Online, you have this today. At its most outrageous. I just think people should hear this as you continue to reference this story in your mind. At its most outrageous, the conspiracy theory that we're talking about here that grew out of that initial Fox story suggested that Hillary Clinton arranged to have Rich assassinated after he betrayed the DNC by sending internal information to WikiLeaks during the campaign. All of this was based on the idea that an internal mole betrayed the DNC and that the Russian hackers had nothing to do with it. Okay, I'm going to call you again, maybe every day for the rest of the year.
We'll keep updated. Thanks very much for having me.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
There we go. Mm-hmm. 207. Thanks again, Margaret Sullivan, the media columnist for the Washington Post.
Lord have mercy.
Joining us in the last half hour to explain the very complicated, bizarre Seth Rich story. Did Hillary Clinton have him assassinated? If she did, well, then that story's got some legs that they were purporting on Fox News that Sean Hannity seems to love. But if she didn't, then
don't
that's
even say that. Why do you even say it that way?
Because that's the way I was talking. I don't mean it that way.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to grant any possible legitimacy to it. I mean, it's so absurd on its face. It's sort of like the Pong Pizza. What was the name? Ping Pong?
Ping Pong Pizza.
Ping Pong Pizza, where the guy came in and said, no, Clintons are running a sex ring here, and shot the place up. It's so absurd in its face, you can't imagine that anybody would take it seriously. And there they are digging and promoting.
I think, you know, the Tribune Tower has all these sayings about First Amendment or freedom or blah, blah, blah on the
carved
walls.
Carved into the walls.
Right. And there's one from Abraham Lincoln, let the public know the facts and they will decide, or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Let the public know the truth and they will get it right. And that's our problem now. No one tells the truth. No, we don't agree on what's objectively true. We say things like that we want them to be, and no one knows what is or isn't a fact. So there was a member of Congress referring this week, a Republican member, Jeff Flake, I think it was, who said he saw a survey recently that 50% of Republican voters think Donald Trump won the popular vote.
They do not.
I'm citing him, and he's a pretty reliable guy.
I don't believe that.
Well, I'll try to find it, but I mean, he's the one who said it.
I know that. I mean, I'm not.
But you know what
that.
I'm saying is, because so many people say anything, no one knows what. There is no truth anymore. There's no agreed truth.
And I think people so feel that the end justifies the means that they don't care, even when they know it's not true. For instance, if the White House knew that story was absurd on its face, but they thought they would benefit from it, then they go ahead and push it out anyway. They don't discourage it. They say, yeah, go ahead. Ah, that might help. By the way, what is the truth then on the Boy Scouts story? So the president gave that wacko speech to the Boy Scouts, and immediately the Boy Scouts issued an apology. The same way the police departments across the country sort of disowned the president's remarks to their group, the Boy Scouts issued an apology saying the president's words were inappropriate. We apologize to the kids and the parents for anybody who took offense or who was utterly confused by what he was saying. If I'm not mistaken, the White House is saying that the president of the Boy Scouts called the president. Steve, I don't know if you're still tracking with me here, but did the president say that the...
He had an interview with the Wall Street Journal, and he said the head of the Boy Scouts called him to praise the speech, said it was, as I recall, said something to the effect that it was the best ever.
Yeah, sure.
I can find the quote.
Okay, here. And what did the Boy Scouts say about that?
They have no record or recollection of any such call. The president told the Wall Street Journal he got a call saying it was the greatest speech that was ever made to them and that they were thankful.
Wait a minute. Say that again, Steve.
This is paraphrased from AP. The president told the Wall Street Journal he got a call saying it was the greatest speech that was ever made to them and that they were thankful. The scouts responded saying, we are unaware of any such call.
Okay. There's a little bit of that out there. you've been paying attention to the news, right? What with you being a newsman and all?
Yeah, some of the time.
I don't know if you know this, but there's this tax that's going on in Cook County on soda. Pardon me, on sweetened beverages, but it's not being uniformly applied. It is. None of us understands the uniform. That's the problem. There is a sort of method to the madness, but most of us only see the madness. So I have in front of me beverages that you may be consuming in Cook County, and the question is, are they taxed or not? I'll throw a couple at you, but Steve, if you want to call right now, 312-981-7200, I'll ask you a beverage. If you correctly guess whether or not it's going to be taxed, we'll give you a Lou Malnati's pizza.
Me?
No, the listeners.
Oh, I thought you said Steve.
I'm going to throw a couple at you just to kind of demonstrate to the audience how much fun this is.
Can I disrupt you one real quick?
Yeah.
A Politico Morning Consult poll that was out last week, 49% respondents said the GOP nominee, Donald Trump, won the popular vote.
I believe that, Steve, but I still don't believe the poll. I do not believe that half of...
what do you believe and don't believe?
I don't know why people say those things to pollsters. You're saying that 50% of Republicans, is that what it was, or GOP members?
I'm trying to find it in an article. It says nearly half of Trump voters, so
Trump
people
voters,
49% said the Republican nominee won the popular vote.
He lost by 3 million votes.
The next words are, despite the fact that he earned nearly 3 million votes fewer than Clinton, according to a poll released by Morning Consult Politico. Just 40% of Trump voters thought Clinton won the popular vote.
You know when they say that conservatives, Republicans, or Trump supporters believe that Barack Obama is a Muslim or wasn't born in the United States?
Right.
Is not a U.S. citizen. And it's an alarmingly high number of those people. I don't believe that either.
I'm sorry, man, but you better start believing it.
I know I don't want to believe it, but I think that maybe my heart is maybe as right as my head on this. I don't know why people respond the way they do to polls. The polls are reflecting what people tell them, but I can't believe those people are telling the God's honest truth, what they believe, to the pollsters. I cannot believe that half of Trump supporters don't know that their guy lost by 3 million votes. You see what I'm saying? There's the distinction.
I don't know what to say to you. I mean, you can take comfort in believing that, but
I want you to tell me, you're right, John. Some people are just so pro-Trump that they will not answer that poll question correctly. They're going, yeah, and he won too. They know he didn't win the election's popular vote. He won the electoral vote. They know better than that, but they're not even going to give that to the pollster. They're just going, yeah, just to make us furious.
No, I don't think that's true.
That's my psychology.
I think you've got people, the president included, saying, you know, that there were 3.5 million illegal votes and that those would be uncovered. And I think people want to believe him, and so they do.
There's no evidence of that. But people, that did not happen.
49%.
It's 2:13. Moving on to the Cook County Beverage Quiz Game. Debbie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Where do you live? Hoffman Estates?
Hoffman Estates is where I'm at. I live in Downers.
Oh, so you Downers. You're not. Are you in Cook County?
No, I'm in DuPage.
Yeah, well, sure you are. Sure, lucky you, huh?
Yeah.
All right, but you're familiar with this Cook County soda tax thing, right?
Yes, because I work in Hoffman Estates, and it's in effect.
Oh, wow. You know, it'd be interesting. So those of you that are working in one and living in another, as you go back and forth, just to see what I'm going to guess will be wild disparities in prices, right?
Yeah, I'm afraid to go to McDonald's and buy a Coke in Hoffman Estates.
I know. And even if you're like, okay, well, I will because it's right there and I'm hungry. But then you feel like a sucker. Like, if I could just hold on for a few more miles, there'll be another one once I cross the county line. And that's so unfair, it seems to me, to the McDonald's and the 7-Elevens and the gas stations and the grocery stores.
Absolutely.
Diet Coke, taxed or not taxed, an additional penny an ounce?
It is taxed.
Ding, ding, ding. You're absolutely correct. Lou Malnati's pizza will be shipped to you immediately.
Okay, thanks.
Hold on. Talk to Elif off the air. Let's go to line two. All right, that's how we play this game, Carl, in Riverside. Are you ready?
I'm ready, John.
How are you, Carl?
I'm good. How are you today, sir?
I love your voice, man. Are you a lifelong Chicagoan?
Absolutely, yes.
Perrier L'Orange, the orange-flavored Perrier water.
Ooh.
Is that taxed or not on the sweetened beverage tax?
I'm going to go with tax because it's flavored.
It is not taxed.
Oh, I knew it.
All these years, you've been a good citizen. Now we got to take away your card. Thanks for calling, bud.
Okay, thanks.
Have a good day. Because while it may taste sweet to you and while it may be flavored, it's got no sweetener in Perrier L'Orange. Let's talk to Eddie on line three. Eddie, you ready to play?
Yeah, I'm ready. How's it going, guys?
Real good. Thanks for listening, man.
Always, every day.
Sugar-free Red Bull.
The sugar-free? Not taxed.
It's taxed.
No! Man.
While this Red Bull is sugar-free, it does have aspartame, which is on the list of sweeteners. So even though it's sugar-free.
It sounds like a trick question to me.
It totally is a trick question. Welcome to Cook County. Are you kidding me?
No, it's Cook County.
Thanks, Eddie. Have a good day.
Thank you.
You got to buy your own pizza. And by the way, when you do, you'll have to pay extra for the soda that goes with it. Hey, Joe, you want to play?
Yes, John, let's do this. I'm hungry.
I'm telling you what, Joe, this game's harder than you thought.
Yeah, the last question, that was truly a trick question.
Even I was like, really? All right, ready?
Yeah.
LaCroix lime water, that sweet lime-flavored water that LaCroix puts out? Taxed or not taxed?
I'm going to say taxed.
He says tax. I'm going to let you have a lifeline to Steve Bertrand if you choose to use it.
Yes.
Steve, LaCroix lime-flavored sweet water.
Well, I will say this, that it is not to be taxed, but it is being taxed.
I want to know what it's supposed to be.
It's not supposed to be.
Steve says it's not taxed. What do you want? You want to change your answer or go with your own gut on this, Joe?
No, I'm going to go with Steve. He's smarter.
Steve is right. It's not taxed.
All right.
But did you see the story today?
He saved you there, Joe. Hold on. Elif's going to talk to you, okay? So Lou Malnati's, you betcha, bud. Lou Malnati's goes to Joe on line four, Elif.
But did you see the story that there are some stores apparently charging the tax?
Yeah, why are they doing that?
Well, they're arguing that it's difficult to figure out who to tax and who not.
For the same reason our audience is batting 50% on this quiz. Steve, Izzy's sparkling apple, taxed or not taxed?
I would think it would be taxed.
It's not taxed.
Because it's not sweet. It's naturally sweetened?
I guess. Yeah. I just think here's what you do. You go like this. Oh, that's sweet. Taxed! That's how you know. But if you go, not so much, then it's not taxed. If you're not sure, give me some. When I get to be king, it'll be very simple. I'll take a sip and go, oh, that's delicious. You have to pay more for that.
Who's going
to
want that? You'll sit in the customs house and sip every beverage.
And then they'll go, I think I'll pass anyway.
Not taxed.
Let's talk to, hold on a second here. We'll go to line five. Hey, Jeff in Chicago, you're on WGN. How are you, Jeff?
I'm great. How are you?
How you doing on this quiz, man?
I'm getting, it seems to be the ones that inherently seem like they'd be taxed or not, so you kind of guess the opposite.
Okay. Use your reverse psychology on this one. Ultra Blue Monster, you know that monster drink? The Ultra Blue Monster Energy Drink. Taxed or not taxed?
Non-taxed.
Now, is that what you think and you're going the opposite?
Oh, no, I absolutely think it probably should be, but I'll go the opposite. Because it seems to me that if it's got some kind of artificial sweetener in it, that's where the taxes occur.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing this doesn't. I don't know.
It's taxed. You're wrong.
Oh, you got me.
Yeah, they snuck some sucralose, some sort of fancy sweetener in there. It's line number 22 of the ingredients. And
it does.
Sorry about that. But at least we now know, huh?
Yes, we do. I'll have to stay away from it.
My best to you, Jeff.
Thank you, too. Have a good day.
Well, and if you're not sure, here's how you'll know. Wow, it's more expensive than it used to be. That's how you'll know. Maybe you don't even want to play, Eric. Hey, Eric in Sugar. And Eric is in Sugar Grove, so he should be an expert on this. Eric, are you ready?
I'm ready, Jeff.
But this is tough, Eric. I mean, I got to tell you, I don't think this is a slam dunk. You ready?
I'm ready.
Vitamin water, zero, squeezed lemonade. There is something called Vitamin Water. That's the brand. Vitamin Water, zero, and they have a squeezed lemonade that they make. Vitamin Water, zero, squeezed lemonade. Taxed or not taxed?
Taxed.
This is a man with confidence, and he's right. Vitamin Woo-hoo! Water, zero, is going to get himself a lose. All right, hold on.
Whoa, Elif. The best.
You talked Elif off the air, okay?
All right, thanks.
All right, we'll do maybe one more. Elif, who should we go to next here? We'll take Robert in Munster, Indiana. Hey, Robert, you're on WGN. How are you?
Good. Good afternoon, John.
Don't come up here, man.
I hear you.
Or if you do, load up. Just, you know, load up the trunk before you. In fact, what you could do is buy all of those liter bottles of soda and then just come up to Cook County and, like, at the end of exit ramps, just sell it right there.
Don't get me started.
Gatorade G2 Grape Drink. Gatorade G2 Grape Drink. Taxed or not taxed? Now, remember, if it's a sweetened beverage by Cook County standards, then it's taxed. And if it's not a sweetened beverage, then it's not taxed. Is Gatorade G2 Grape taxed?
I would say no sweet, so it should not be taxed.
No, if it, wait, it is sweet, so it should be taxed, or it's sweet, so it shouldn't be taxed?
It should not be taxed.
But it's a sweetened beverage tax.
But it's a sweetened beverage tax, so I'm going to have to say yes.
Taxed.
Taxed.
Oh, wow, you are... I'll tell you what, they grow them smart down there in Munster, Indiana, Robert. You're absolutely right.
Thank you, John.
But there's no way to know. There's just, if it's impossible to know.
I'm staying in Indiana.
Well, we're going to ship a pizza down there and force you to eat it, okay?
Thank you so much. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, I enjoy you. Hi, Bob, it's John. How are you?
Hi, John, I'm doing well. How are you?
Hey, Bob, the market might close today over 22,000. How about that?
It's just a number, John.
You never disappoint. You never disappoint, Bob. It's, well, not just a number. I mean, tell me, you guys are, there's confetti cannons going up in the offices there at Private Vista, high fives, you got the vodka out, you're mixing cranberry drinks. Tell me you're doing that.
No, not in the least. Not in the least. I mean, for us, our clients' portfolios are just a means for them to live more enriched and fulfilling lives. It's not about a number. It's not about how it's doing today or tomorrow or yesterday. But, I mean, I know what you're trying to get out of me, and so I'll give you a little bit. I mean, as we look at the markets, it's, you know, right now we're at 21,999 with about 12 minutes left on the day. We've had an extremely, extremely slow recovery, you know, since 2007, 2008, early 2009. And I think that's the reason why we've been able to have such growth and hit so many new highs without a, you know, without a bear market, with, you know, without a big correction, because it's been a slow, grinding recovery.
Yeah. Well, why?
That said,
go ahead.
Pardon me?
Well, no, finish that thought.
That said, the markets are relatively pricey right now. In terms of, you know, how much you pay for $1 of earnings. But that was kind of based on the thought that we'd get some tax reform, which would be, you know, stimulative, and we'd get infrastructure spending, which would also be stimulative.
Neither of which we've had. Neither of which we have.
Neither.
No. And it's in, and if I were to guess, I would say none of that is on the near horizon. I'm amazed then that, forget 2007, let's talk about the third week in January. I'm surprised that since then the markets continue to do as well, because I thought some of it was predicated on that, and that's not happening right now.
And you're exactly right. I think that a lot of what the markets thought about in terms of this run-up isn't going to happen this year. I mean, I think eventually we're going to get corporate tax reform, because we should. Both sides of the aisle think we should, and we need to. And I think we're going to get infrastructure spending, because the infrastructure in this country is not in good shape. And like I said, both of those things should stimulate the economy, should stimulate growth, and should help corporate earnings. Now, that said, corporate earnings have been coming in pretty darn strong, but still not strong enough in our view to justify, you know, some of the values.
Okay,
that you're seeing.
Maybe you're answering my, I got 60 seconds here, Bob. Maybe you're answering my next question, and that is, do you think the growth since the election is in fact fundamental? It's just based on the value of these companies and their performance, or is it political? It's anticipating that we're going to get lower taxes and more spending. Which is it?
In my view, John, I think it's more the latter. I do believe it's more on the thought that I want to buy now, because once, you know, Congress passes tax reform and infrastructure, then all of a sudden, you know, there's going to be a lot better earnings and markets are going to go up. So I think people kind of jumped in early with the thought that was going to get done.
And if that doesn't if that doesn't happen, Bob, then do you think we're going to get a correction just based on that alone?
It's very possible, sure. I mean, it's been a long time since we've had a correction. Corrections are healthy. They're normal. They're going to happen. I think long term, there's still plenty of potential growth in the markets because in this country, we have potentially a lot more growth of our economy, but it may not happen as soon as everybody would like.
I got to tell you, Bob, people come to me for financial advice all the time, and I give it to them, and then they do the opposite, and they tend to do pretty well with that. But if you had told, say we have a correction from 22 back to 19. Holy crap, nobody wants that. But if you told me the day that President Trump was inaugurated that in August we would be at 19, I would say, yahoo. So I think I could even suffer a correction right now just because things have gone so well.
I would totally agree with that. I mean, they've gone in, I think, further than they should based on current economics. However, I do think that if our government could get their act together and get some of these things, very needed things done, that the markets could still have a good ways to run.
Bob Westrick is a partner at Private Vista. Are you still in Hinsdale?
We have one location in Hinsdale, and we're also at 1 North of Sale downtown. So we have two locations.
How can folks find you online, Bob?
Go to myprivatevista.com.
Thanks for your help today, bud. I'll talk to you later. It's 238. I don't know if I mentioned the phone number, but I want you to call this number, 630-942-4000. That's how you get tickets to see Big Shtick, our conversation with Teddy Roosevelt, Saturday, August 12th at the College of DuPage. It's sponsored by American Sail for all your patio, pool, spa needs, and more. Visit one of their 9 Chicagoland locations or just go to americansail.com. We are going to have such a terrific, fun program. Not this Saturday, but next, August 12th, College of DuPage, a spontaneous, unrehearsed conversation with Teddy Roosevelt. You get to ask questions, too. So here comes the eclipse. I mean, literally, here it comes. I mean, it's a thing that happens based on the rotation of the moon, the sun, the planets, the moon, that sort of thing. And so it is happening, and then it's going to happen. That's my explanation of it. Michelle Nichols joins us now. Michelle is the Director of Public Observing at Adler Planetarium. Hi, Michelle. It's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm just great, John. It's great to be on with you. Thank you.
So really, the eclipse is just sort of a process, right? I mean, it's based on just the movement of the planets and the moon and the sun and the stars, right?
Exactly. So we've got the alignment between the sun, the moon, and the earth. And when you have a perfect alignment where the three all line up, the moon's shadow falls on the earth. If you are underneath that shadow, you can see an eclipse.
How often does a total solar eclipse happen anywhere on Earth?
On average, about once a year. Sometimes there isn't one during the year. Sometimes you can have up to 2, 3, 4, 5. So on average, about once a year.
Then why does this one feel like such a big deal?
Because it's passing over the United States, where the path of totality, which is the region where you will see the moon 100% cover the sun, is passing from Oregon to South Carolina through Carbondale. And basically, this one is such a big deal because pretty much all of us are within a day's drive or less of getting to this path.
How dark will it be in Carbondale?
In Carbondale, it's going to, now provided it's not cloudy, in Carbondale, it's going to be about as dark as a full moon evening. So if you go outside when the full moon is out and you see how dark the sky is there, that's about how dark it'll be. And if it's cloudy, it'll be even a little darker.
And that is as dark as it will be anywhere, right?
Correct. Yes, that's about as dark as it gets during a total solar eclipse.
How dramatic will the shift be from light to dark?
It'll be pretty dramatic over the course of a few minutes. So about 20 minutes prior to the eclipse, when the sun is covered about 85%, 90%, something like that, you'll start to notice that the shadows around you look different. The shadow edges are going to be sharper, and you'll see underneath all the trees, you'll see little eclipses spangled underneath all the trees because the leaves and the trees are acting like little pinhole projectors and putting little projections of eclipses all over the ground. And then the closer you get to the eclipse, well, your eyes are still adjusting to the dark, so you won't really truly notice until maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes prior to the eclipse. Then you kind of notice that something strange is about to happen. And then right before the eclipse, that's when it really starts to get dark, and you go, hello, here we go, buckle up, we're about to go on a ride.
What will it be like in Chicago?
In Chicago, we're going to get about 86 to 87% of the sun covered by the moon. And so the sun will look like a kind of a big sliver on the top of where the moon is in the sky. You cannot look up and see this just with your naked eyes. You need proper solar viewing glasses in order to do this. Or use the tree method and look underneath all the trees, and you'll see the eclipses on the ground.
But explain to me what, relative to bright sunny versus completely dark at night, it will be like in Chicago. What comparison would you have there?
It'll mostly look bright sunny. It's still, even 87% of the sun covered is still an awful lot of sun. And I like to say our sun is deceivingly bright. We don't really realize how bright it is until you cover up 87% of it, and it still looks pretty bright out. So you won't really notice that it's going to look much darker in the sky.
So if you want to experience any of this, you really do got to get in your powerful Mach 5 and head south, huh?
If you want the true total solar eclipse experience, yes, get thyself to the path of totality, because it's one of the most amazing experiences you can have, astronomically speaking.
Says an astronomer. I mean,
says someone who actually has viewed one of these things in person and started sobbing when it started, and I didn't expect that reaction. I was really kind of surprised. Even though I understood everything scientifically, when you really do see it in the sky, it looks like a hole in the sky. You absolutely, at that moment, you viscerally understand why people were terrified of these things in the past, especially if they had no idea that one of them was going to happen.
Just kind of snuck up on them, and now all of a sudden there's a black hole in the sky, it's dark,
oh,
and they
yeah.
don't know what to do.
Yep. People have done absolutely crazy things when they didn't know that an eclipse was coming. And, for example, you might think the world is ending, because that's kind of what it looks like.
What an interesting, powerful, emotional reaction you had.
Yeah, I was amazed. And I was given a very good piece of advice, which was put any cameras down. So if anyone is listening and they're planning on going to the path of totality, or they're thinking about it, and you're thinking about taking pictures, you can try. But my first piece of advice is, if this is your first eclipse, buy a professional's photo later. Get it on a nice paper, print it, put it up on the wall. Put your cameras down, put the Facebook Live down, put all the electronics down, and just enjoy it. Because once totality happens and the moon covers the sun completely, you take your solar viewing glasses off and you look at this with your own naked eyeballs. And that is the experience that is just amazing, because you see parts of the sun that you've never seen before.
I'm sorry, you're saying that at the moment of totality, you can look directly at it without glasses?
Absolutely. It's a common thing when you read online, say, never, never, never look at the sun. Caveat, if it's during a total solar eclipse and the moon 100% covers the sun, there is no sun peeking out at all, then it is absolutely safe to look at just for that time period. When that sun starts peeking back out, you put those solar viewing glasses back on. And the part of the sun that I'm talking about that you can actually look at that's safe is called the corona. This is the sun's wispy outer atmosphere that's only about as bright as the full moon. And so that's the part that is safe to look at.
This is amazing. I'm going to call you the queen of corona.
Hey, I'll take that. I had another radio DJ about 15 years ago call me Astro Babe, so you can call me the queen of corona. I will take that, John.
Frank has a question for you. We're visiting on a phone line, obviously, with Michelle Nichols, the director of public observing at the Adler Planetarium. Hey, Frank, what can we do for you? You're on WGN.
Hello, King John. Hello, Michelle. My question is that, not to what may happen on Earth, but what would happen on the surface of the moon, because the moon has now blocked the sun rays from penetrating the Earth's atmosphere, and now the moon is absorbing those sunlight rays, which, if it wasn't for the moon, they would be headed to Earth. Is anything going to happen to the moon?
No, nothing happens to the moon, because basically this happens all the time. So this alignment between sun, moon, and Earth, it happens every time the moon goes around the Earth. It's just that at this point, the shadow of the moon is actually falling on the Earth instead. So there is always sunlight shining on some part of the moon. So it's just how much of that lit part we can see is what we call a moon phase. And so the effect that you're going to feel is not actually on the moon. If you're totally within the path of totality and the moon covers the sun, the temperature around you, the air temperature around you on the ground may actually drop. It could drop 5 to 10 degrees in those couple of minutes that you've got with no direct sunlight falling on you at that exact moment in time.
Boy, that'd make the temperature game we play here even that much more complicated. I'd have to factor that in.
Oh, yeah, you might have a little trouble with that. I heard you're not very good at it, even though you invented it.
You really don't need to volunteer that. You're a guest on this show.
Well, you said it.
I don't know why I was thinking about this just now, Michelle, but what would be terrifying is if you were at sea and it's the day and then all of a sudden this dark, boom, just, you know, envelopes your little boat out there. Wow.
Yeah, actually, that's where I saw it. I was on a cruise ship in the Black Sea, and you can see the shadow cone coming at you.
Oh, my God.
Which is pretty cool because there's nothing out on the water to block the view, which is kind of like when you're up on maybe a hilltop or a mountaintop. That's also a cool place to see the shadow coming because if you're up high enough, you'll see it coming at you, racing at you at maybe 1,400 miles an hour or so.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. It's traveling the speed of the what? Of the moon? Of what?
Yeah, it's the combination of the moon's speed, the Earth's speed, all that kind of stuff.
So did you say 1,400, 14,000? What's the thing?
1,400, yeah. So in the Carbondale area, it's going to be traveling at about 1,400 miles an hour.
Okay, you know what? And I'm getting a little more enthusiastic just about the science of this. I may start sobbing. I mean, you really do sort of have a very... Almost tangible display of the majesty of the moon, the stars, the sun, don't you?
Absolutely. It is a direct line between you, moon, and sun at that point. And then also when it's dark enough, so when the moon covers the sun, you won't have enough time for your eyes to fully adjust to the dark. You need about 20 minutes for that. And totality is only about 2.5 minutes at most for this eclipse coming up. But you will see some bright planets and maybe a few bright stars in the sky. So Jupiter, Mercury, Mars, and Venus are going to be in the sky during the eclipse.
Two quick questions from our listeners, and then we'll invite you on another day. Patrick, you're on WGN. Jump in there, Patrick. What can we do for you?
Hi, Queen Corona.
Oh, I love it. Oh, my God. It's a thing now. Go ahead.
I was wondering, since when we have a full moon, they say that police stations get filled up more, or there's an effect that the moon has on, well, besides the fact that it has an effect on the tides, does the sun have an effect on the moon as far as gravitational pull, or just as I said, how the moon affects the Earth?
Or how about human behavior? I mean, are you anticipating any other unanticipated things about this, Michelle?
Well, basically the effect it'll have on people is they'll be so amazed by what they see in the sky. Some people will cheer, some people will cry, some people will be stone silent, but no crazy other behavior that any of that, because the whole moon affecting people sort of thing, it doesn't actually happen. Think of it this way. The moon's gravity causes tides. The tide in Lake Michigan, think of how humongous Lake Michigan is.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of tide in Lake Michigan is only about a centimeter tall. That's less than half an inch. So think of that giant body of water and only half an inch of tide. So the effect on us is basically negligible. So, but no effects, no major effects like that. So.
Okay, Michelle, I'm out of time today, and all my phone lines are ringing with people with questions about travel tips or best ways to view it, et cetera, and I can tell you'd be a good resource for us on this. What are you doing Monday?
I am making time for you on Monday.
Okay, let's plan on Monday, you coming back on the show, either in studio or on the phone like this, okay?
Yep, no problem.
I'm on from 1 to 3. I'm going to put you on hold. You make a date with my producer, Elif, okay?
Sounds great.
That's the Queen of Corona, Michelle Nichols. I'm Julio down by the schoolyard. She is the Director of Public Observing at the Adler Planetarium. And sorry we don't have time for the rest of your questions here, but we'll sure pick it up on Monday. It's 2:52 on WGN. Editorial in the Chicago Tribune, editorial in the Chicago Sun, crimes about Steve Bartman getting his ring. The Sun-Times said Bartman, the Cubs, and a ring of real class. The Sun-Times liked the idea that Steve Bartman was given a ring. In part, they said the Cubs have presented Bartman with a World Series ring, which is pretty great, and he has accepted the honor with a graciousness his critics do not deserve. This brings us to Mrs. O'Leary and the cow. She was scapegoated, too. There's no evidence, zero, that the Chicago Fire of 1871 was started in her barn by a cow that kicked over a lantern, and though she was hounded for the bum rap the rest of her life, she clammed up and said nothing. Good for you, Mrs. O'Leary, and good for you, Steve Bartman. They thought it was a nice gesture. The Chicago Tribune said, "We feel oddly unsettled. We wish Bartman the best. We do not care for the spectacle the Cubs created to make amends. What Steve Bartman deserved was not a tribute from the Cubs, but an apology from those who vilified him. The abuse Bartman suffered at the ballpark that night was appalling. They say, and they quote him, I will not participate in interviews or further public statements. The Cubs, by dint of the decision to give Bartman a ring, put him back in the spotlight he assiduously avoided. As one of our colleagues tweeted, the guy who had nothing to do with the Cubs actually losing long ago gets a ring for having nothing to do with them actually winning. The offer feels like a stunt created by the Cubs. I'm a little more with the Tribune on that. We got into this the other day when we first found out, and I'm still on the side of, as nice a thought as it is, I don't think I would have done it. Ro Khan, the ambassador to, where would we appoint, if Ro, we were talking about ambassadors off the air. If there was an ambassadorship, and many of them are open, and Ro is going to get the appointment.
I'd say New Zealand, Australia.
Oh, I'd take somewhere New Zealand in a heartbeat.
I would take Paris. That's
I would love France. France, as Johnny Depp calls it. Then I could have Johnny Depp investigated by the CIA.
You know how you can tell which newscaster studied French in high school? They always go, Macron. Whenever that name comes up.
Yeah, you know, and more often we run into Spanish language words. I don't even try because I don't speak Spanish. I don't know what to try. Even if I have a clue, I don't trill something because it's not going to work for me. I'm a fraud.
Macron va à la piscine avec Alain.
I know.
Nicely done.
Où est Philippe? Il est aux eaux.
Philippe va à la bibliothèque.
See? Right.
That was my favorite word.
All of us tourists walking around France going, I hope somebody asked me where the pool is.
or the library.
I know,
I'm good.
I can tell them where Philippe is.
Avez-vous chocolat au lait?
Good.
Oh, that's great.
Pour le petit déjeuner? That's all I know. I can get through maybe a little bit of breakfast and to a pool. And that's, well, of course, you know, that's how that's in America. We didn't take that very seriously. Speaking of that.
What are you going to do today?
Speaking of that, an exchange just occurred in the White House press briefing between that Stephen Miller guy.
Oh, I saw that he was there. I forgot all about him.
He went after Jim Acosta from CNN. Because Jim Acosta asked a pointed question about this new immigration rule. We'll play this for you.
Oh.
It is must-hear radio when you hear this. It's really something.
I saw he was standing at the podium, and I thought, I forgot all about this guy. He is one of the most hated people in Washington, and he delivered the goods today, huh?
He did. And he
didn't
was
disappoint.
He's a good bad guy. Yeah. I mean, if the president wants to put a bad guy out there to make people, you know, to take some heat off, he's the perfect guy.
All right, I'll stick around for that, guys.
Bruce Rauner is going to be with us, too, in the 5 o'clock hour. Don't miss that. He's the governor, I think. Right?
Yes. Rauner's going to join you?
Rauner's going to be with us, yes.
Is that a bit that he's doing?
No, it's the real governor Rauner who's going to be here.
All right.
And Graham Elliott's going to be here. He's real, too. I don't do a very good Graham Elliott impression.